It's the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. The stock market has seen incredible swings during the pandemic as investors lose and gain confidence. Yet CNBC notes big tech stocks have fared better than most as people suddenly working from home rely more on online services. Amazon stock rose more than 3% just yesterday. Amazon, that's the company we're talking about this morning, the same one with a few thousand workers in its Kenosha Fulfillment Center here in Wisconsin. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. How much do you know about Amazon? It's one of the world's largest companies and retailers. How has Amazon changed the way you shop? Do you use it or do you opt out? 1-800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. James Ball is the global editor of the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. He oversees the not-for-profit's international reporting projects. He wrote the United States of Amazon series for digital news outlet called Tortoise Media. James, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. Your recent reporting is focusing on Amazon. There are so many large tech companies that affect our lives. Why focus on Amazon?
I think the effect of Amazon is kind of even more obvious than something like Google or Facebook, where at least they kind of stay in our phones or on our computer screens. You can be sort of browsing Amazon on your computer, using internet services that it's provided with a whole secret business it's got behind the scenes on an Amazon Kindle device. You might then ask a question to an AI made by Amazon, Alexa, and then you may sort of get a delivery at your door of all the goods. It's the logistics operation. It's got sort of indirectly about 4 million jobs reliant on Amazon. It is this huge physical sort of entity in our world, as well as this sort of tech company. And so it really brings together the online and the offline kind of worlds in a way that most tech companies don't.
Yeah, because you have the physical, you can look out the window and see other people with Amazon boxes, or they might be sitting on your counter while you're using your phone. We know Amazon as that website. You can order just about anything. And there's something that strikes us that you've written. So we're going to use your words. You write, to be able to click a button and see almost any product appear on your doorstep within 24 hours feels less like commerce and more like magic. What do you want people to realize about that?
I think it's that this doesn't come without a price. You know, we shouldn't sort of turn Amazon into a sort of, you know, cartoon bad guy. It is pretty great that we have access to all of this stuff, especially if we don't live somewhere where we have a bunch of stores on our doorstep. But it now means that every mom and pop store in every small town is competing directly with this global giant, which is quite ruthlessly focused on efficiency. You know, they want to get stuff to you as quickly as they can, as cheaply as they can, and they cut out any sort of waste. They sort of make everything run as quickly as possible. And that comes at a cost for the workers. You know, their warehouses are so automated and so sort of regimented that you do hear reports of sort of people working in really, really tricky conditions and feeling really pressured, you know, not even to take restroom breaks. And does those effects, we sort of have to make sure we don't keep invisible. It's really easy for us to see the good side. You click something and 48 hours later it arrives on your doorstep. It's great. It's magic. But that's been done by actually quite a lot of people working very hard, and also maybe at the cost of other businesses and other communities that we wouldn't want to lose.
Certainly we talk about brick and mortar stores shutting down, but I mean, Amazon in its beginning was not a find all be all place. They really focused, I mean, I remember, on books.
It's kind of wild to think about it now. If you go back to 1997, this was Amazon's kind of first annual report to its shareholders. It had just listed, and it boasted that it had 200,000 books on offer now, and how huge a range that would be. And that it now needed to a really big warehouse to store them. And how quaint does that sound now? Like, how cozy. And I think the thing we can miss with Amazon is they always had this huge ambition. And they used books because that was an easy first product. it's sort of quite easy to store. It sort of doesn't go out of date. You know, it's not going to rot in your warehouse. And so, you know, you could work out the kinks in the system with that and then expand your range. But what we miss about Amazon now is even the bit of it that's most obvious, the website that we go on and shop, it's not really a store. Something like half of what you buy on there is sold by someone else. It's not sold by Amazon. And so it's a little bit like if someone like Walmart let in all the mom and pop shops from the high street and kind of went, actually, you can carry on, but we want to take a cut of what you're doing and you'll sit inside our big shed. And so quite quietly, it's turned into this sort of logistics platform for the world. I mean, you know, I don't know how much they're doing in America. They're doing some of this, but in the UK, they're delivering coronavirus tests and they're right in all the logistics of the crisis.
Yeah. And there are some places where, you know, Amazon has same day delivery. You can order your groceries through Amazon. They partnered with places like Whole Foods. So they're, it's a really expansive operation. So we're going to talk more about some of the challenges you found with Amazon. But people have benefited from Amazon's rapid growth. That's real. That's true.
I mean, for one thing, it's one of the best stocks that you could have bought over the last 20 years. You know, they have really returned for shareholders. They are worth more than $1 trillion now. They are likely to be worth $2 trillion in the next few years. That's benefited a lot of their employees. It's benefited a lot of other places. It's sort of known as a good place to work if you fit the culture, if you work in the actual headquarters, if you're a programmer or you're helping sort of deliver sort of some of its other stuff as a more senior role. It's got quite a ruthless culture in some ways. They want you to be critical. They want you to be honest, but it gives you a lot of power to make decisions. They pay well. So it's created a lot of good paying jobs and not necessarily where other tech companies have. They're not in Silicon Valley like almost all of their rivals. So for some people, it's good jobs. For some people, it's good shareholder return. And the sort of distinguishing, almost scary thing about Amazon is its sort of ruthless focus on the customer. You know, Apple have got really, really fancy offices. You know, they've got sort of 40-foot high sort of plate glass doors that open with this custom one in the world mechanism, all of this stuff. You go to Amazon, your desk is still made out of a cheap old door, and they still use chain link fence and all of this to kind of go, the money goes on the operations, the money goes on delivering for the customer. And this kind of really relentless focus comes from Jeff Bezos. And it does mean they deliver fast, they deliver reliably, and they deliver cheaply. And that does benefit a lot of customers. They are a well-managed business for what they do. And the question is, what are the side effects of what they do? And is that something that Amazon and Amazon's managers should worry about? Or is that something that the people who regulate them or make the laws should worry about?
James Ball is an investigative journalist who's exploring how the company Amazon has changed our economy and our society. Taking your calls at 800-642-1234. You can also send us your questions via email. Just type in ideas@WPR.org. James, Amazon has played an important role in helping millions of people get these essential goods during the pandemic. There have also been coronavirus outbreaks at their warehouses, including in Kenosha here in Wisconsin. I mean, employees working shoulder to shoulder, warehouses running full speed ahead. What has that meant for Amazon's employees during this pandemic?
I think this is where we really start to get into the concerning parts about Amazon. The company insists that they've tried to take lots of extra precautions. They've put safety first. They've paid attention to all of this. But that's not what everyone who works there says. And what's sort of been quite concerning is, you know, a lot of the warehouse workers at Amazon are very casualized jobs. They're not union jobs. They don't have much security. And they're often quite worried to speak out if you need the paycheck. And no one wants to be without benefits during a pandemic, if you have them. But you have this sort of issue that people have said in reality, the conditions weren't living up to what management said. They were too close. There were outbreaks in warehouses, as you said. And some staff even sort of up the food chain tried to actually raise the alarm about this and kind of just got denials or got stonewalled. And so in the piece that we did for Tortoise, I spoke to a very, very senior exec who had quit Amazon because about four or five of the managers who said, we are really worried about our staff safety and our warehouse's safety and we need to do more. They got fired for speaking out on that. And for this sort of senior exec who Amazon is graded level 1 to level 12, Jeff Bezos is level 12. If you just come and start working in a warehouse, you're level 1. This guy was level 10. He was called Tim Bray. And he quit his job and probably walked away from $1 million or so in compensation because Amazon was firing people who were trying to say, you're not doing enough to keep your workers safe during coronavirus. And, you know, I think a lot of us want Amazon to keep working through corona. For some people, it's how they get their groceries or it's how they're getting stuff to keep their home running, especially if you're vulnerable and you can't go out. But we shouldn't sort of lose sight of the fact they don't seem to be doing everything they can to keep it safe, despite all of their assurances.
We're talking with investigative journalist James Ball, whose reporting focuses on the influence that tech companies have on our lives, and that includes massive online retailer Amazon. Room for your calls at 800-642-1234. What effect do you think Amazon is having on our economy, on workers, on our society? Ideas at WPR.org is the email address you can use, or you can pick up the phone, 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. We're having this conversation on The Morning Show. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking with investigative journalist James Ball. He's written a series called The United States of Amazon. He reports that Amazon collected $33 million in sales every hour of every day for the first 3 months of this year. And as we have this conversation, we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you think you know about Amazon, one of the world's largest companies and retailers? How has Amazon changed the way you shop? 800-642-1234. And we've got a caller on the line now. Steve from Sun Prairie is thinking about this combination. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
You know, I don't want to date myself here, but I remember watching the great Dr. Milton Friedman on a Phil Donahue episode, probably in the late 70s, early 80s. And Phil Donahue was lamenting how big Kmart was getting and how Kmart was knocking all the mom and pop businesses out. And he said, what's going to happen if Sears buys Kmart? They'll rule the world. Well, we all know what happened. Sears bought Kmart and they're both bankrupt. So There will be other companies that come and take market share away from Amazon when Amazon loses its ability to meet with the client, the customer's expectations are. That's just the history of capitalism.
Steve, thanks for that line of thinking. And James, what do you think about Steve's comment? Can someone just replace Amazon? Is it different?
Steve makes a really good point. And actually, I think Jeff Bezos would agree with him. Bezos is kind of an interesting CEO. Some tech CEOs start to think of themselves as like quite strange, sort of evangelical. The CEO of We, which used to be called WeWork, talked about building a company that would last 1,000 years, that his children and grandchildren would take over as if it's an ancient empire. Bezos says companies come and companies go. He expects Amazon to decline and to die, but he wants that to happen long after he dies, which is pretty understandable. And so he talks about day one companies and day two. And he says day one companies are trying to grow. They're seeing it as the start of something. They're being very sort of relentlessly focused on expansion, on doing more, doing what they can. And he says the second you become a day two company, it's the beginning of the end. It might take a long time, but essentially you're on managed decline. You're sort of heading towards the exit. And so, yes, Amazon won't be forever, but it intends to be around for quite a long time. And so is it about saying this company's got to take over the world and we'll never be able to handle it, like some people got overexcited on for Sears, for Kmart, for Walmart, you name it? No, it won't be forever. But how do we make sure while it's here, it's working in all of our interests and it's not sort of sucking the life out of the economy too much or taking too big a cost on workers or on society? And maybe we think the balance is just about right where it is. But I think we should at least ask ourselves the question on, is it? Because quite a few people who used to work there's even some analysts will say it's a well-managed, very successful, very focused company, but it's focused on its customers, on its shareholders. Someone needs to look at the wider implications of it.
Talking with James Ball, who's an investigative journalist. His new series looks at the power and influence tech companies wield on our lives, focusing on Amazon today. And James, when you talk about that, making Amazon work while it's around, if it's not too big to fail, it is such a huge part of our economy. Sounds like you're talking regulation.
I think we probably are talking regulation. I think some people would probably like to see Amazon shut down tomorrow, but that would put hundreds of thousands of people out of work and actually deny a lot of people services they like. You know, it isn't just a store. A lot of the web runs on Amazon servers. That's a $40 billion a year business in revenue. You know, they've got our streaming services. They've got Audible. You probably sort of use Amazon services that you don't even know about. What we need to sort of look at is, are we doing enough to cover workers in an environment where Amazon's there? You know, is there a way to find unions that work for much more casual workforces? Should we have more protections in there to sort of look out for them? Are there things we could do to try and make sure that we feel like we're getting a fair amount of tax from companies like Amazon? A lot of brick and mortar stores sort of complain that they have to pay local taxes and Amazon doesn't. And so, of course, it can undercut them. Are there ways we can level the playing field? And if you're not American, and you can guess from my accent, I'm not, Britain gets no tax revenue from everything it sells with Amazon. We get some sales tax, but nothing from the profits. Should it be the case that if this company's sort of become one of our biggest retailers, should it not pay a bit of tax in each company it operates? That's kind of the questions for regulators. I think if they're looking at how do we bring it down for its own sake, that's kind of anti-competitive, that's anti-business, that's not going to help. But can we make sure it's benefiting everyone and not just a tiny group of owners? I think that's exactly what regulators and lawmakers should be looking at.
You mentioned taxes. What kind of taxes does Amazon actually pay?
So Amazon still actually doesn't make nearly as much profit as it could, which helps reduce it a lot. The main sort of things that Amazon pays is, depending where it locates, it does have to pay some local sales taxes and some taxes in countries. But like other multinationals, it's faced quite a lot of criticism for setting up quite elaborate structures that minimize how much corporation tax it pays. And obviously, that mainly affects the US and the US shareholders. Now, all of that's legal, and it's in line with a lot of other companies doing it. But some of the questions for countries around the world is, you know, we used to have UK-based retailers, or France had French retailers that would sell in the country and pay corporation tax and sort of feed through the system. One question that is being asked a lot in Europe is, hey, if Amazon makes, say, a third of its sales here, shouldn't it be paying about a third of its corporation tax here? Now, that's got to get a bit contentious all across the world. And so you might need lawmakers in the US and around the world to go, what's fair for these big companies? How much tax do we think they should be paying? How do we think they should pay it? And I think the risk is that all the regulators end up arguing with each other so much that Amazon and other tech giants can carry on pretty much not paying very much to anyone, because we all try and wait to sort this out perfectly first.
You're saying Amazon is a global company, so you need a global approach if you expect to be able to set regulations or standards.
Yeah, there are things that countries can do on their own, and especially when it comes to looking after your workers or checking your conditions or making sure competition's fair. But there are limits to what you can do as one country. Even if you're a country as big as the US, which is sort of unusual now, but the EU overall is a bigger market than the US. It's bigger and it's richer if you count all 27 countries in it. My country is not in it anymore. But that means that it has to be taken very seriously. You've, of course, got growing markets in China and India across the world. And so one country can do a little bit, and if they have the will to do it, they should. But if everyone just focuses on their own thing, they kind of get a bit stuck, because these are global companies and they can move jobs, they can move data, they can move warehouses and operations a lot more easily than they could 20 or 30 years ago.
James, thank you for breaking down your reporting for us and helping us better understand how Amazon affects us in ways we might not even realize. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
James Ball is the global editor of the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. He oversees the not-for-profit's international reporting projects, and he wrote the United States of Amazon series for a digital news outlet called Tortoise Media. His new book is called The System: Who Owns the Internet and How It Owns Us, and it comes out in August. Just ahead, we're talking with four teachers from across the state. We're hearing how they handled sudden distance learning, how they're wrapping up this school year, and what comes next. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.